get Ask Coach Mike here at AskCoachMike.com. Premium guys, I love you so much it hurts. I'm so humbled by your support of my site. Great podcast. Actually, our fourth podcast with Coach Steve Kadelka from Lynchburg, one of my all-time favorites. I've been to their practices in person. It's phenomenal. I went to Lynchburg. He went there in 97. Since that time, he's like 246-104, I think 18 straight winning seasons, five straight trips to the NCAA playoffs, D3, former USILA Coach of the Year, past president of the U.S. Lacrosse Men's Division Coaches Council Executive Committee, currently chairperson of the NCAA D3 Men's Lacrosse Championships Committee. Gives you an idea what other coaches think of him and his credibility. In the podcast, we kind of review the ABCD coaching method he uses with some twists, how he runs that practice with 55 players on the roster. That's got to be a challenge. We review a little bit the 7v7 as only he runs it, you know, with a box and rules. You can go back and listen to the previous podcast. That's awesome stuff. But we spend a lot of the podcast on how do you coach against a team that's shutting off your best offensive threat. And we got an article on this too. Really, really good stuff. And then he closes with a neat little crunch drill in the soccer circle that he runs in a 9-inning format. Anyway, I'm so appreciative of everything you've done for me and the support of my site. Without further ado, one of my favorites, Coach Kadelka.
Hey. Let's Coach Mike here. Let's CoachMike.com. Man, I am thrilled today. I'm usually intimidated by extremely tall people, but I'm going to let that one slide. In lieu of the fact that got a real strong Christian coach here and obviously one of the top D3 coaches in the country. Steve Kadelka from Lynchburg, back for the fourth time. I can't believe it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm surprised you keep on having me on this thing.
Well, it's been like every 2 years, I think, we've had you back. And believe it or not, you know, for the listeners, if you go in our search box and go back to the first podcast, I still get emails on that that four-man passing drill, you know, where you integrated bounce passes and behind the back, and I think you did it as part of your pregame for a lot of
still
years.
Still do.
Great thing to do while you're warming up the goalies. But, so your legend lives on, man. I think that was like 2009, 2010, or whatever it was, and here we are now.
Awesome. Well, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Coach, I got some philosophical questions I want to talk to you about. I got some detailed questions, but let's start with the practice plan. You know, I think over the years when we've talked, you were, you know, like a lot of coaches, pretty steadfast in, you know, what you referred to as the ABCD practice plan. It was kind of individual work, combination work, a little bit greater numbers of transition, and then just let the kids play.
Yeah.
And then I think in our last podcast in 2014, you know, you were coming back and sometimes integrating the 7v7 games, which, you know, a lot of coaches run 5v5 or 7v7 games, sideline to sideline. The thing I loved about you was, and listeners, go back and listen to it and read the articles, you actually integrated a box in there, which I thought was an ingenious move, which is why you're Coach of the Year, and I'm just sitting here in an office in Atlanta. But it seemed like when I listened to the last podcast, you were starting to integrate some other stuff in terms of the sequence. And I have to tell you, Coach, you know, over the last 2 years, we're seeing that standard practice sequence kind of thrown on its ear. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, you know, I think a lot of it was driven by Daly, you know, when he was at Tufts, about his engineers could only come to practice. You know, they had labs, and the academics took precedence, so he had his full squad there. Maybe if he – I don't even know what time he started, but let's say hypothetically he started at 4. You know, the full squad would be there like 4:45 to 5:15, you know. So that's when he would run his 10v10 and started to play games with changing that stuff around. So here's my question, man, after that long-winded intro. How steadfast are you on the sequential model, kind of a build-up model of practice plans, or have you really started to vary from that?
You know, I mean, I think we've
good question. Right out of the
What's a good one? Yeah,
good
here we
question,
go. Here we go, right?
Coach Mike, man, right
into
it.
You know, we probably stayed as consistent with that as we can, you know, but I also feel like you just alluded to with, like, someone like Tufts and things, you know, everybody, you know, every day is a little different, you know, for a college student-athlete. And so, you know, while we try to be as consistent as we can with our guys, I think that kind of helps them. You know, there are days where, you know, you're coming off of a win or you're coming off a loss and you're kind of saying, you know, we need to get this point across, you know, right now. And, you know, and it is good. And I think it's kind of nice for the players to, you know, for at times to change it up a little bit. You know, they're expecting one thing and maybe you come out and you do something different. I think it kind of, you know, lets them be a little bit, you know, playing on the run a little bit, as you say. But, you know, we definitely tried to stay, you know, that early part of practice, you know, as much individual stuff as we can, you know, whether it's offense, defense, goalies, even some of the face-off guys, you know, really getting their, you know, their reps, you know. I mean, I think that to me is the big thing. I mean, I think, you know, we a lot of times in our practice planning part of the day try to sit there and say, you know, let's say we're going to shoot. You know, we got 20 guys we want to get shots for, you know, our attackmen and middies. You know, how can we get them the most shots in a 10-minute period? Does that mean we have to bring out four goals, you know, and four buckets of balls? Or, you know, or is a day today where we're really working on technique where, you know, we might go on one goal or two goals and have, you know, 10 on each and a coach on each. So you can kind of sit there and pull a guy out and say, hey, you know, next time I really want you to concentrate on where your foot's going or things like that, you know. And so, you know, we're fortunate here that, you know, especially when we're in the season in the spring, a lot of our guys will come in throughout the day and get their, you know, get a lot of extra shots in. And that's a great time for us to kind of get more of that technical part done with them. But realistically, you know, I think you're always trying to look at, you know, any drill we do, you know, how many repetitions is someone going to get at this? Because that's really where they learn the most, you know.
Well, and I think the listeners may not realize, you know, the challenge that you have in terms of numbers, you know. Mm-hmm. When I actually came up and watched your practice before you guys played Stevenson a couple years ago, I was aghast. How you like that word, huh? Aghast.
Yeah, it's
I was
a good one.
Aghast.
It's a good one.
At,
SAT word.
Yeah, I was aghast at the size of your roster, you know. Mm-hmm. And then as I started to bring it up in subsequent podcasts, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that the D3 rosters are larger than D2 or D1 rosters, you know.
Right.
So if you got, what do you got out there, man, like 55, 60 guys?
Yeah, well, last year we carried the largest roster. We had right around 55, you know, and in a perfect world.
That's a real challenge
up.
To get everybody, that was the point I was getting at, you know, just to...
Yeah.
To get the touches and the shots in,
yeah.
You know, with that many guys, because you never know, you know.
No, and you know, you're hoping everybody's healthy, you know, and
there's a guy on the scout midfield line today, you know, that you see some stuff, or I think years and years ago, you and I were talking about you revamping the man up and let everybody play man up and man down, and was that the year you had a backup goalie that ended up playing man down or something like that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, see, you didn't think I was paying attention, man.
You're right on it.
But I think that's critical, you know, you never know. You know, you just never know not only who's going to blossom, but who, when they start to play with, you know, the ones or the twos, show you things as a complementary player. You know, or a ground ball, or a move the ball guy, or a guy that's always in the right place at the right time, or whatever it turns out to be. You know, it could be a myriad of things, but yeah, incredible. So I applaud you. You know,
yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story. I want to get to the podcast, but I'll tell you a funny story. You know, when Ricky Soule went from Stony Brook to Navy, you know,
yeah,
I'm not sure they cut at Navy, and we just did we were doing a podcast with him, like, literally after his 15th practice or something, you know, as the new coach at Navy.
Yeah.
And he said they had two fields, like 60, 70 guys, you know, and at Stony Brook, he carried a roster like 28 or 33, you know.
Wow.
And he was overwhelmed. I mean, not over, I don't mean it in a negative sense, but surprised and overwhelmed in a positive way of how it had such an impact on the practice planning and you know, he had so many coaches, he didn't know what he would do with them, but with that many players, he quickly figured it out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is part of your, you know, it becomes really a big part of when we're setting up this practice, you know, how do we get everybody involved, you know, because we, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, you're only as good as your last guy, you know, and So while, yeah, we want to get our, you know, our top dogs a lot of reps, but we also, you know, we also have to give those other guys reps, you know, and we're coaching those guys because we, you know, we tell our guys all the time, I mean, those, you know, the guys who are a little bit further down the depth chart, they got to be pushing, you know, they got to be pushing up from the bottom, you know. We don't want our top guys always having to reach down the ladder and pull those guys up. They have to be climbing the ladder and pushing. It makes your best, you know, it makes your best players better. And we've been fortunate that the culture we have here kind of has created that. And so it is nice knowing that when you're going into some of these drills that, you know, some of the guys that might not get the normal reps on a Saturday night game, you know, we're giving them reps. So now when these guys graduate, you know, we can, you know, they're going to be ready to step in and hopefully fulfill some pretty big roles.
Well, I think you were the first to tell me this, and then I've heard it maybe, you know, we've done like 145 hours of podcast now. Not many times, maybe a handful of times after that, you actually had, if I remember correctly, Coach, a end-of-the-season award for the top guys on the scout teams that you recognized in front of everybody.
And that gets voted on by the players. And, you know, I think our players are
well, you didn't call them scout teams. What do you call them, look teams or something like
look
that?
Look team, yep. So they'd be, you know, they kind of get our unsung hero award, essentially. And, you know, they're the best of the, you know, there's the best defensive look guy, you know, whoever that person is. And then the same thing on the offensive end. And it's neat seeing, you know, tallying those votes because a lot of guys get a lot of votes. You know, there's only going to be one winner, but a lot of guys get recognition. And what's really neat about it more than anything is seeing, you know, maybe someone winning that award as a freshman, you know, and then turning around and maybe winning like our offensive or defensive MVP as a junior or senior.
And when you see that,
you know, or, you know, vice versa, when you're, you know, this happened a bunch of times now lately, you know, just because we've, you know, we've been in the NCAA tournament the last 5 years, but, you know, there's a roster size that can only be on the sideline during a game and for one of those NCAA games. And,
Really? What's the size of that? I didn't know that.
It's less than it should be. It's low 30s or something like that. So, you know, if you have a team of 50 guys, you know, and you have 32 guys in uniform on the sideline, those other 18 guys are in the bleachers, you know, and watching
that's
that
bad,
game.
Man.
And, it's not right. It's something I think a lot of coaches have really voiced, you know, their you know, opinions on, as have I. But at the same time, it's a reality, and you deal with it. And what's neat about it is when we sit there the day before an NCAA game and we're kind of announced and we're talking in the huddle and we do it, you know, man to man, we talk to these guys about it. I tell them, like,
tough call,
you know,
man,
there is a lot.
Like number 32 and 36. I mean,
it's not easy, you know, but what's neat about it, the silver lining to all of it is really you're telling guys, hey, listen, there are guys who are going to start in this game tomorrow who, when they were freshmen, potentially, or even sophomores, were in the bleachers. And so you just got to keep on going, you know, and it's not your time just yet. And that's okay, you know, but it's nice having, you know, I can say that there's been a handful of guys that that's happened to. And, you know, it does provide a little bit of a silver lining for that tough moment, you know, but it stinks. But our guys have always handled that with class and, you know.
Well, don't you know somebody on the NCAA executive committee or something? I'm pretty sure you do.
Well, you know, I tell you, Mike, I mean, there's been a handful of coaches that have expressed.
I mean, there's a guy in a mirror, I think, isn't he, or something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and we fought it, you know, but it's that way with every sport, you know, and it stinks.
So do you ever turn the ABCD completely on its ear? I mean, I know you did that with the 7v7s, but do you ever come out and just run 10v10, like 15?
Oh, yeah. Yes, we do. Not a lot, you know, but we will. You know, we'll come out and put them into, you know, certain situations. And, you know, it's kind of like anything else. You know, you got to feel, you know, you're hoping to have a little bit of your ear to the floor in the locker room and kind of hearing what the temperature of the guys is. And, you know, maybe sometimes after a big win, you know, you come in on Monday and shake things up just to kind of, you know, rattle their cage a little bit so they understand that, you know, get off their high horse a little bit. And then other times when you're struggling, you know, sometimes, you know, last year, you know, we were at certain times of the year, we were losing a little more, we were winning. And, you know, it was kind of nice to kind of, you know, come into the practice scenario and change it up a little bit and just let them know that, hey, you know, we're always going to try to find the right solution to this. You know, there's no, every year is different. You know, the recipe is a little different every year. And, like last year, you know, it took us a long time.
It was a crazy year for you. There were a lot of close games both ways, really.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was. And I, you know, we, you know, the best thing about last year, in my opinion, was our guys, you know, they hung in there, you know, through all the games we were losing, and we played a heck of a schedule. And then, but we got to the middle, I thought, of April. We went over to Hampton, Sydney, and, you know, we didn't play as well as we would have liked to. And I thought, you know, to their credit and Coach Rostand, I mean, they played awesome and they took it to us. And, you know, that was a little bit of, you know, that kind of, I think the guys kind of had a little bit of a soul searching, you know, after that game and figured out, okay, you know, the temperature changed right away on that Monday practice. And, you know, we ended up making the ODAC championship game again. And, you know, which is, you know, the last 5 years we played in four of those things. So, and that's not easy to do in our conference. And, you know, and WNL, you know, had a great, you know, we were down a goal going in the fourth and they beat us in the fourth quarter. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But, yeah, it was a weird year. You know, it was a little different than the year before, obviously, but I felt like, you know, we got into the tournament and, you know, we're going up to Gettysburg and I think everybody in the program felt like, hey, you know, we can, you know, win a couple of these games. You know, we can get right back to that championship game. We were, there was the level of parity. And I think in our sport was as close as it's ever been, you know, last year, you know, in terms of one or two goal games here and there. And that's exciting. So,
well, we try and keep the podcast timeless, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on 2016, but I mean,
got it.
You opened up incredibly tight, you know, with Salisbury and then just look, you know, I mean, yeah. Hey, did you stay with the 7v7 concept, or have you gone away from it, Coach?
We try to do it. We do it. You know,
in the early season or in the fall, or when
it all depends. You know, really, it's easier to do when we're up on our turf field. You know, just because of the netting and where we are, our practice field, it's a little bit harder to do it because of the woods and stuff like that, losing balls and everything. But because we want our guys shooting. But you know, it's really actually, you know, we try to do it as much as we can, and really, you know, probably. You know, where we've made, you know, some changes, we try to put some rules into it at different times. Like, you know, sometimes we'll do it where the, you know, if you got four guys on defense, you got to, you know, those guys are going to play zone. So now you're attacking a zone a little bit. Last year we actually did it towards the end of the year, we actually put a shot clock. You know, and it was a 10-second shot clock, you know, going from one end of the field to the other, and you got to get a shot off. And so that
I think the most ingenious move, well, aside from the box, that was a great idea, was last time we talked, you said there were some days where you just ran it with offensive guys on the field.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
Man, that's a wonderful idea. You know,
yeah. You know, what's really neat about that is, you know, maybe you're in the early part of your practice and your defensive guys are doing footwork or they're doing long passes, you know, doing whatever they're doing over there. It's an awesome thing for our offensive guys to now, you know, maybe they did 10 minutes of shooting, right? And now you play a 15-minute game or whatever, you know, now you're getting all that in, you know, and our goalies have been warmed up. Now they're going to get live shots, you know, and I think it also teaches some of your offensive guys to play defense, you know, and, you know, the neatest thing about our sport that, you know, you're always trying to teach and always get across your guys is that, it doesn't matter who it is, but like if you're playing 7-on-7, so we're going to be 4-on-4 versus 4 in the offensive end, you know, with a goalie, any 4 can go over, you know, and so how you utilize the substitution box, how to utilize the midfield line, that to me is something that if guys can really understand and pick up on, you know, it's amazing how many times you watch just a game of lacrosse and a guy is 10 yards in front of a player. And he stops because he's normally the person that doesn't go over that line.
Right.
And then a guy runs 10 yards behind him to go over. You know, how much of that can you, you know, and especially now with some of the stick handling, the stick that these defensemen have and short stick D middies and all those positions, I mean, they're maybe just as much of a threat going over the midfield line. You know, and I think that's what you saw, like, you know, last year in the tournament, which was nicely, you know, like at school, like Brown really kind of highlighted and accentuated because they were on TV, you know, and now you're not just hearing about it. You're actually watching it going, wow, it's pretty impressive what they're doing, you know.
Well, we had a podcast with him early in the season, and, man, he's been great to us.
He's an awesome guy.
And he did a statistical analysis of how often his O-middies and D-middies were on the field and touching the ball. And there was a game when it was like 68% D-middies versus O-middies playing time.
Mm-hmm.
And then went back and revamped a lot of his drills, especially the transition drills.
Right.
You know, like the 70-yard down kind of drills, you know, maybe with a counterattack back or something. And, you know, really put the emphasis on the D-middies and the LSMs, you know, playing, even though it was always integrated into practice, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, re-emphasizing, you know, how important it was.
Yeah.
Hey, listen.
It makes sense, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, and again, that's why I'm in Atlanta. I asked you a question a couple of the podcasts, and the answer kind of surprised me when I went back and was re-listening to them preparing for today. How much skeleton work do you run, Coach?
It all depends. You know,
I mean,
early
before were, you know, early in the season you ran a lot, especially on clearing and stuff like that.
Yep, yep.
But I didn't come away with the take that you were a huge skeleton guy. Over the last year or so, I think we've seen, and again, you know, when I say a trend, I mean maybe 50 or 60% of the coaches that we talk to, and a lot of coaches we've talked to three or four times, so it's interesting to see how they're, actually, it's amazing, you know, and unbelievably educational for our coaches to listen to us to see how they've changed their practice plans, or tweaked them, I guess is a better word, you know. But we've seen kind of an influx back into skeleton work.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely do it, you know. I mean, I think that there's, especially for bits and pieces of fall ball when we're trying to introduce some things that we know will sustain the test of time. You know, there's going to be some offenses, some defensive stuff, riding and clearing that we're going to incorporate throughout the entire year. And on those items, we definitely, you know, we try to give our guys, you know, I say this to our players all the time, like we're going to try to, we understand that all of you learn differently. And so there's going to be a group of you that we're going to show you on the field. We're going to walk you through it. We're going to have you skeleton it, you know, do it on air. Then there's going to be a group of you we're going to, you know, that's going to learn better when you put it on a chalkboard and you see it. You know, then there's going to be a group of guys that, you know, you show video, you know, you film it, and then you bring them in the next day and you say, you know, and obviously our fall ball is limited, so it's hard to get all that stuff in, but it is nice, you know, when we're teaching the younger guys, I mean, it's great to be able to do that. And the days when you, you know, they always say, you know, what's the best way to learn something is to teach it, right? And so, you know, sometimes when we're in the film room or something, I'll call on some guys and say, okay, you know, Mike, come up to the board, you know, draw this offense or draw this ride and draw this clear. And it's kind of funny hearing the oohs and ahs out of the other players sitting in the seats, you know, like, I don't know if that's right, you know, but it's, you know, if they're learning it, everybody learns differently. And especially in today's world where technology is so driven, you know, they're so driven by technology that, the more we can utilize that, I think the better. But at the same time, there's nothing better than getting on the field and running it and running it and running it. And then when you're on air, it makes it a little bit easier because you can kind of dictate, you know, the tempo and kind of set it up. But, you know, I also think that that's the most enjoyable thing about our sport is that, you know, you're going to get put into so many different situations. You can't drill all of it, you know, but you got to put your guys in those situations where they just play. Yeah, we want to get our, you know, it's funny when you put in something new that day in practice. I always tell our guys, what you're doing today is you're thinking, right? And then the more we do this, the more we just want you to play. And we don't want you to think about it. And it takes everybody time to do that, for sure.
Well, and I think, you know, I think what the more successful, and I don't even know what the definition of successful is, I'm not talking about wins. Coaches realize is that, you know, you really have to modify whatever you do to the skill set that you have on the field.
Right.
You know, and I'll never forget, you know, talking to Danny Sheehan probably 6 or 7 years ago or 5 or 6 years ago, and we were talking about, you know, people wanting to run a Syracuse-style offense or a running gun or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And not realizing, you know, how much of the fundamentals, you know, were in the drill. And he was saying, well, they can recruit to their offense. You know, we have to adjust our offense to our recruits.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, tell me what you mean, but I'll never forget it, you know. And he said, if you ask me, you know, September 1st, what our offense is going to look like, I can't tell you.
Right.
And you're thinking, this is LeMoyne? Seriously, this is LeMoyne, you know?
Yeah.
But we have, you know, you, and I understand, you know, the growth of, you know, the motion concepts from 3D and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, it's like, you know, when I went to Auburn, the second year, I had 2 6-foot-4 attackmen, but neither one of them could carry a loaf of bread 4 steps, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole offense had to be modified, you know, to put them in a position to you know, post up and shoot, you know, or quick redirects or, you know, an off-ball pick for them, getting them in a position where they could shoot because they just couldn't carry, you know? Not against good teams. I mean, against average teams they could carry, but they were good players, I guess. But, I don't know why it took me 30 years to learn that lesson, you know, but ultimately I did. Hey, let me deviate for a second, kind of lead me into my next area of questioning.
Yep.
So, what is your son, now 11?
Yeah, good call.
I've known him since he was 7. Are you coaching him?
I try to help out as much as I can. So, yeah, I got my oldest daughter's 13 and going into 8th grade, and then Billy's 11, you know, 6th grade, you know, playing some football right now, and then our youngest, Mary, is 9, so going into 4th grade. So, we're man down all the time.
And now, the reason I ask you the question is I'm going to ask you to pontificate here a little bit. You know, we have a ton of youth coaches on the site.
Yeah.
You know. And, like, as an example, when I do, you know, my coaches' clinics, which are none of my stuff, just, you know, what we've learned and what was a new trend we saw over the year, you know, we always do a film classroom thing and with films of the drills. And then, you know, I insist on running a 90-minute practice with their middle school team, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want your travel team. I don't want your seniors. Give me the players that are developing.
Yeah.
And, you know, invariably coaches come up to me and say, oh, you got my team. None of these guys can go left. Incidentally, I was so impressed when I saw you warming up that goalie shooting left and I realized you were left-handed. I was telling somebody that story. And they were telling me, like, in the North-South game, you actually went in, played attack, and scored a couple of goals right-handed or something like that. But,
That's a lie. Whoever told you that is not right.
Is that right?
That is not true at all. That would be nice, but it's not true.
Yeah, we talked about... you know, on our site, we're a huge proponent for high school and middle school programs to focus on 200 touches in the first hour.
Yes.
You know, as kind of a non-negotiable almost, you know, 200 touches. And, you know, I always get these coaches, they're on the field with me because I'm explaining to them why we're doing the drill, which is kind of our next subject. You're so good at that subject of why, which is so critical for coaches today. But, you know, 45 minutes into practice, guys are coming up to me saying, you're a miracle worker. I'm going, no, it's touches, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, at the U15 level or the U11 level, the day of taking Johnny by the shirt sleeve and saying, when he goes here, you go there, you know, and we tell those guys to run 20 or 30 minutes of different 3v2 looks, you know, because to your point, earlier points, you know, the field is always open. I know you run a lot of 5v5 at that age group and those kind of things. But can you just spend a moment talking about how the days you do spend there, we can run – college-oriented drills with U11 and U15, we just got to have a boatload of balls. But can you speak to that point a little bit, Coach?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, in what I do in the spring, I do coach, you know, our youth level starts at U7, and they got, you know, sticks and helmets on, really. And you know, so I've been doing that for a couple of years now. And this year we just actually moved over to the local middle school where they got this great wall, you know, and it's like – it was awesome. And you know, we brought out tennis balls, and we had pinky balls, and we had lacrosse balls. And literally, you know, we just go for an hour, and 30 minutes to that, these U7 kids, was literally teaching them, you know, probably 30 minutes was on the wall and learning how the right technique, and all of a sudden they started to maybe catch some of them. But also teaching them how to pick it up, you know, and little, you know, little games, how you run, you know, cradle and run and do those things. But, you know, and I've always felt this way. I mean, I think if the game becomes a much more enjoyable game, the more you can catch and throw, you know. And so, you know, even at the youngest level in our town, we're trying to hit on that. But when we, you know, when you go, you move up to the U9s or U11s, you know, which my son was this summer, like I coached his team for 2 weekends this summer. When we went to practice for an hour, hour and a half, I mean, that's really, we did at least 30 minutes of, you know, the first 30 minutes. So a third of that practice was maybe partner passing. It was any, you know, any and every little drill, depending on where we were, that was passing, catching, throwing. And you're exactly right. I mean, you know, we have like a wall here on our campus that, that we utilize. And, if they throw it above the wall, it goes into like this little, you know, kind of, landscaped area. And so we always just have a bunch of balls standing right behind those guys. So if they throw it up there, forget about it. It's over. You know, get another ball and just keep on throwing it against the wall. And, you know, to me, that is, you know, I remember being, when I was on that NCAA championship committee, being at the Final Four practice on a Friday with all the Division I's line up and go for about an hour. And I'm sure you've been at those. And Duke, you know, it was Duke's turn. And it was, you know, Coach Janowski comes out and, you know, put 60 minutes on the clock. As soon as you step on the field, the clock counts down. And I'm sitting there watching going, I can't wait to see what they do in the 60 minutes. And all of a sudden, you know, it's 25 guys and, you know, on the sideline, another 25 guys across them. They did part, you know, and he's barking out the orders, right hand, left hand, you know. And they spent 15 out of their 60 minutes the day before the NCAA Final Four passing and catching. And the beauty of that is if you do count those reps, man, those are awesome. You know, especially if you really, you know, kind of tell my guys, like, or even the younger kids who are like kind of think they're a little bit too good for that. I'm like, well, okay, now if you really can pass and catch on a consistent level, challenge yourself, right? So, you know, have someone put, you know, the stick is right by the guy's ear. How many of those can you put in a row right there, you know, or, you know, or work on your offhand, whatever the case might be. But I am, and people around here say this all the time, and I am the biggest proponent for that, you know, that stick work. You know, I mean, I think it's just, it's what turns the game from being a really, you know, a fun game to, it could be a great game for you just because your stick skills are getting that much better.
Well, if you're coaching U7 or U9, you know, a lot of times we'll just make it a partner pass into a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
So that the 25 minutes is not totally monotonous, you know.
Right,
and even
right.
If you're forcing them to catch and shoot left-handed, you're getting a left-handed touch.
Oh, yeah.
And to be honest with you, you know, I probably should focus more on the fundamentals, you know, where the stick is, where the hands are, those kind of things when you do that. But really, I just want them to touch.
Yeah,
by doing a couple of shooting drills, you can get them 60, 75 touches literally in 8 minutes.
Right.
You know,
well, you know, sorry to cut you off, but, like, it's really, I think if you're, you know, I say this to some of the youth coaches right here when they, you know, they ask me some of these questions. I say, if I'm just a parent or if I'm an outsider going to a practice, I should be able to have a stopwatch and say it's an hour-long practice. How long out of that hour does my son or my daughter, depending on, you know, what you're doing, have a ball in their stick, you know? And so it's like, you know, that to me is at the youth level, how you probably, when you said earlier success, I think a successful practice at that level can one of the definitions of it can be defined by that. You know, if I'm a player and I am standing in a line drill and I might, you know, the line drill might take 10 minutes, but the player might only have the ball in their stick for 30 seconds out of that, that's 9 minutes and 30 seconds that are a waste, in my opinion. You know, and so how can you, you know, and so you gotta think of it, you know, I mean, just a kid having a ball and a stick and just walking around is very good for them, you know.
Well, we always tell people you don't learn to throw and catch by chasing balls under the bleachers.
Right, right.
You know, if you go to my website when it talks about, you know, when we do the clinics on what we've learned, the comments from everybody are pretty universal. If you have this guy in, expect your ball budget to triple.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they're going, you need 4 buckets of balls for 20 little kids?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going, they don't get better by chasing.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And even if the tennis balls, even, you know, any ball is good, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you can go to any old probably tennis place, you know, that they'll have boxes of ball, tennis balls sitting around. You know, but, you know, can I take those off your hands? Sure. You know, and next thing you know, you got 4 buckets of tennis balls, you know, and they don't travel as far and they're light. They're a little harder to catch, which is good because it kind of concentrates on your wrist a little bit. But
well, and soft hands.
Yeah, soft hands is great, you know.
You know, that's an interesting point. We, over the last year, 2016, man, we saw the use of tennis balls at the NCAA coaching level increase dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody would have a bucket and run, you know, or do some tennis balls occasionally, or, you know, stuff with the shots with the goalies in tight, trying to protect the goalies.
Yeah.
But we're seeing that expanded in many, many ways, you know, in terms of running drills and just it's, yeah, I mean, to your point, just forces players to be better fundamentally.
Yep.
Hey, I got a coaching question for you.
Okay.
And again, trying to keep this timeless, but at the end of the day, you had an incredible attackman last year, you know, Austin Stewart.
Yeah.
And I know you were asked this question on a couple of occasions. I was researching interviews. But he got shut off quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know? And one of the email questions that I get all the time, especially travel teams, you know, and I'm not going to get into a dialogue about the pros and cons of travel teams. But with travel teams, if the team has not practiced a lot together and they shut off one or two stars, oftentimes those coaches, you know, get perplexed. And I have kind of a short list, you know, that we try and do when somebody shuts somebody off.
Yeah.
But I would love to get your take on that in terms of different alternatives that coaches can use when a player is shut off. And I think he had like 65 goals or something, I think I looked. Can you speak to that point a little bit, Coach?
Sure. Well, the first thing, you know, it was kind of neat last year, you know, after the year that Austin had as a junior, and I want to quickly point out that we had another outstanding attackman as well, Aaron Murphy. They were, you know, Austin gets sometimes a lot of the credit because all the goals, but Aaron did a lot of the work. But you know, what was neat for Austin, like last year, so he has all 100, you know, breaks the NCAA record, and you know, early June, you're watching the, you know, the NBA finals, and you know, the Stephen Curry is being shut off now. And
6'5" guy, always talking about basketball. Will you let it go?
Yeah. No, well, you know, I mean,
5'9" people, we don't want to hear a lot about that.
And I, you know, I reached out to Austin. I was like, you know, over the championships, you watching this, you know, and I think you can learn a lot because I think in that sport it happens. And I think, you know, what realistically is probably not taught a lot in our sport is how to utilize the other players. You know, we talk about a lot of on ball stuff, you know, picks and stuff like that, that happens in our sport. But if you are being shut off, you got to learn a little bit of the skill, right, to use another player who doesn't have the ball on his stick, to use him and use his defender as a way to, you know, to pop open. And it's a little bit harder in our sport because it's a bigger field. The timing needs to be that much more, you know, accurate. And whereas in basketball, you know, it's just a smaller court, so the ball's easier to transfer from side to side. But those are, you know, so some of it's just the knowledge, and some of it's like, well, how do you learn that? Well, you can watch. You can watch some of the basketball, you know, college and pro, and learn a little bit from that. You know, but there's a couple, you know, so really, you know, for our purposes with Austin the last couple of years, you know, we would really have a sequence of events that we would do, one of which is just we would just move him from one part of the offense to the other and see how the team, see what that team did. You know, if you know, we might put Austin in a slide position where his defender might have to slide. And if he's not going to slide and he's just going to face guard and shut him off, then, okay, well, now that Dodger has a little bit of a green light to go to the goal. If that wasn't going to work, you know, we would also, you know, have him pick for the ball, try to free that guy up with the ball again, now using him as a pick, because if obviously he picks his defender and the guy covering you know, Austin, if using him as an example, doesn't want to leave him, you're almost picking two guys essentially. And so now you know the ball carrier's coming from X or wherever, going to the goal, and you might get a layup, you know, or at least force a slide. And then, you know, then the other part of it was for him to obviously, you know, work off of another player. You know, when the ball maybe is on the one side of the offense, he's on the other side using another player as a way to kind of rub off him or you know, get off that pick or that screen, and then now transfer the ball to him. And, you know, maybe we have a little mismatch. Maybe it's a shorty and a, you know, in a pull that we're doing that with. And, you know, last case scenario is ball goes out of bounds on a shot. You know, let him go get it, you know. But it's something, you know, what we learned, like going into the NCAA tournament in 2015, I remember coming in after practice and I was just kind of bouncing around a little bit in my office, and my athletic director, who used to be a basketball coach, was like, you know, kind of looking at me funny. I'm like, listen, you know, here we are, in the NCAA tournament, and we're teaching brand new stuff. You know, we're teaching coming off of picks and doing these things, and it was fun. You know, it's like brand, you know, you're kind of teaching, and Austin was learning. Austin did not grow up playing basketball, so this was a brand new skill set. And, you know, if anything, it speaks to guys playing multiple sports, because I think you learn different things, you know, when you play different sports, and that are all transferable to our sport. So that was kind of fun. Those are just a couple little quick things, you know, that I think that we try to do. And, you know, but I think it also depends on the person, the player who is being shut off. You know, what does he know, you know, besides just to stand there, you know, because that's obviously the easiest thing to do.
Coach, old school coaches, you kind of hit my entire email response list. Actually, I have a cut and paste that I send people when I get that question. Should admit that on the air, I guess. Although I put their name at the top, so it's personalized. Mm-hmm. You ever throw that guy inside on a 1-4-1?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, have him come, you know, kind of like your old school Mumbo look, you know, where you bring him on the inside and have the outside guy come and pick.
Hey, there's a lot of us that still run Mumbos, okay? Let's not have any age discrimination here. We're talking to a 60-year-old guy on the phone.
Well, it's funny how that is just such a universal term. You know, it's awesome. You know, it's it's great. You know, but that's no doubt about it. I mean, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, he doesn't have the ball. He's using another player to, you know, come off that screen and get open. And, you know, the hardest part with that is timing, you know. Whenever we're even teaching that, we're, you know, those are great drills, like, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier in the skeleton part. You know,
that's when we run it.
And those are great drills then to also incorporate into shooting drills, you know, where, you know, you're going to get a shot off, now you put him on the inside, dodge up top, you know, screen, come off, catch, shoot. You know, you do that a bunch in some of that, you know, that A part of practice, rather than just shooting, you know, 10-yarder, now you're coming off a pick and or screen and doing that. So it's funny how all those, you know, those things build up, but a lot of times, you know, this is the first time people are really learning how to do that, you know. And that to me is always interesting, because it's, you know, those were skills, or those were things that I was learning as a young kid just because I was playing, you know, so many different sports.
Well, and I know, at least for me, the key element is you got to practice it.
Right.
And before you practice it, you know, at the high school level, you really need to have a sit-down chat with the guy that's being shut off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he's an ego guy, I'm thinking of somebody specifically, you know, in my history, you know, it can't be frustration. It's got to be, how are we going to make the team and you better by working on this and drilling it in practice and emulating that scenario.
Right.
You know, and understanding that, you know, being frustrated and hanging your head, or then, you know, you see those coaches that just pull him out and let the team play 5-on-5.
Right. Yep.
And
yep.
I don't know, man, that, to me, that's like fingernails going down a chalkboard. You know what I mean? Or I guess we don't have chalkboards anymore in today's world. But you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
I just have never been a proponent, or when I see that, I don't know. It just,
well,
I guess I'm old school, you know?
Well, you know, and that happened to us a little bit this year, and I think part of our problem this year a little bit was, you know, we were running our offenses and guys were constantly looking for, you know, maybe in the year before, Austin was open a lot more, and so now they're looking for him, you know, and it was, you know, sometimes you get to the point where those other five guys, like you're talking about, I mean, they need to understand, they also need to understand, hey, you know, what we want to accomplish there, you know, and sometimes, you know, heck, if you pull him out and now you just open up the game a little bit, and that's the beauty, you know, if you're playing, like you mentioned earlier, 5-on-5, 4-on-4 in certain situations, you know, when you're playing 4-on-4 and those 7-on-7 across the field and somebody wants to shut two guys off, that's awesome for us, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
I would agree with that.
We play in that all the time, you know, and so even a 5-on-5 is not a foreign concept to us, and if, But I think we're better off doing that than always trying to get the ball into a stick, you know. And I think, you know, we were very fortunate that yes, I'm sure it was frustrating for Austin, but never was he, you know, he wasn't the guy, you know, in the football scenario coming back into the huddle being like, give me the ball, you know. You know, he understood that there was going to be a time and place where he'd be able to get his hands freed for a shot.
Well, you know, I guess in a perfect world, you know, if you were practicing this, even if it's not sequentially, but running through all those options, you know, can make it so a team can't prepare or be prepared necessarily at the high school level, be prepared for one of those or two of those.
Yes.
But, you know, maybe a couple of those. And if the first pick, or whether it's on ball or off ball, doesn't work, you know, you kind of go back to the old adage that if you make a team play defense for 50 or 60 seconds sometimes, and I hate to say that because, you know, I'm a running gun guy, but, I mean, if you force them in a shutoff scenario to play defense for 50 seconds and you're practicing and integrating some of these techniques to combat the shutoff, a lot of times the first, second look or the third look may not be there, but if you kind of lull them to sleep, sometimes the fourth or fifth look can be really open.
Yeah. You know, and we did, like, you know, we since we saw a lot of that last year, you know, sometimes in like that, if we were playing, let's say we're playing a Saturday game, obviously, and maybe a Thursday practice, you know, we might scrimmage for 30 minutes in that practice, and we might break the ten, you know, in that scrimmage into three 10-minute segments where the first 10 minutes, you know, maybe certain players are getting shut, you know, then the second 10 minutes we might, you know, shut one and do something a little different, you know, and just to, and then, you know, maybe the last segment we shut two different, completely different guys off, you know, and just so they, you know, just in case, because you don't know, you know, you don't want to, you know, that's always the thing. I mean, you don't want to go into a game and not be prepared, but you have to practice it. You know, that's probably the one thing that I've learned over the years is, you know, it's really not what we know, right, in the coaching office going into practice. It's what we can teach our players to know. And some of it's the why. Some of it is, you know, how we're doing certain things. But, you know, I find the more we drill it like that, the more our guys understand it. So if you go in the game on Saturday night and it's the third quarter and all of a sudden two new guys or one guy is getting shut off, they didn't expect it. Maybe, you know, maybe you've crossed that bridge before and then they handled it a little differently, you know. And that's,
well,
and
he, the other,
that's the fun part about, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Coach.
No, go ahead.
Your comment's probably a lot more germane than mine. I was going to say one of the things we found was that by practicing it a couple of days a week, and when that's, you know, I left Auburn. I couldn't take the drive. I mean, it was an hour and a half every day with a time change. I was getting home at 9:30 or 10 every night. Went back to coaching at a small Christian school, 150 boys in the total upper school, you know.
Right.
And the kids made it to the state quarterfinals here, which is quite an accomplishment for them. But, yeah, we had a dominant attackman, you know, and by working on it, especially at the end of the year, closer to playoff teams where they figure they get, you know, you're playing a really good team, they got one good guy, let's take him away. You know, we found that defensively it was a great thing to do coming out of a timeout. You know, if they were winning by a goal, they get the ball out at X on their end. You know, we would immediately go into the shutoff that we had practiced inadvertently trying to work on how to free up the guy, you know, and saw a bunch of guys standing around looking at each other. You know, same concept maybe is if you're not a zone look, you know, coming out in the zone after a timeout or something like that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, you might know that, you know, especially at our level, you might know that a little bit from a scan report. You know, you're watching film, and you can maybe come up with that. But, you know, but that's you know, high school and middle school levels obviously going to be a little bit different probably from the time they have with everybody.
Another thing I love about you is, once I get over the height intimidation, you know, your very deft techniques and expertise, you know, for explaining why. And we talk about it on the site all the time. You know, even guys you think of as conservative and very old school, guys like Richie Meade, you know, even when he was in the Navy, would talk about it's important that the players understand why you're doing a drill.
Right.
And the last time we talked, there was something going on at the defensive end, and you asked the coach how he was going to explain why or what the rationale was, and he was going to say something along the lines of, you've got to have more tools in your toolbox. And you said, let's position it more. When we get into ODAC, we're going to need this.
Yeah.
And there was a very specific, you know, reason why. And then when it happens in a game, you know, the guys on the sideline, you know, reinforcing. I mean, you know, we do that with our ground balls or our 3v2s out of the alley. You know, most guys run them north to south or south to north. We run a lot from the sides, too. And just seems like there's a lot of ground balls that go down in the alley, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you know, when it would happen in a game and we would bang it and get a good look on the backside pipe, you know, every coach, and I think they thought I was an idiot, you know, at the beginning, but or maybe they still think I'm an idiot. That's probably true. But, you know, we want the coaches on every time a drill scenario happens in a game, we want them to walk up and down the sidelines and reinforce it with the players. Hey, that's our 52 drill from the alley, you know.
Yep.
Or that's our redirect through X off a sub or whatever it is, you know, drill that we've run. But I thought your technique of trying to target that to something specifically on why the players would answer why. And before I let you answer, you know, when I was writing my Gen X book, you know, my real life job, I'll never forget interviewing Bobby Bowden, you know, and asking him, what's the difference between today's player and the player of 10 years ago? And in my mind, I have to confess, Steve, I thought Bobby Bowden was a figurehead coach.
Yeah.
You know, I really thought he probably didn't run the practices, wasn't involved in the minutia. You know, he was a patriarch, if you will. And he said the most amazing thing to me. He said, 10 years ago, you say run through a wall of fire, they ran through a wall of fire. Now you have to spend 10 minutes explaining why the wall of fire is critical to their individual and the team's success. And you automatically know if you were successful based on they'll run through the wall higher and faster than any player ever has before. But I think a lot of coaches, when a player might be so blatant as to ask them, why are we even doing this? You know, they see it as insubordination, you know.
Right.
And I'm not sure that coaching hasn't evolved to where laying the groundwork on why we're doing a drill or why you modified a drill based on what you saw in the last game or what you saw in a look team is critical. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We just actually talked a little bit about that as a staff probably within the last week, actually. You know, the why. You know, why are we doing this and what are we trying to do? And, you know, and there's no doubt about it. I mean, what you alluded to earlier in terms of there are so many, you know, we always will try to in the film room show something, right, that it happens in the game. And then say, you know, guys, what drill is this? You know, and hopefully they get that answer correct. And just to kind of bring them to speed as to why, you know, why we do that certain drill, you know, and it's something that we probably can do, you know, a better job of in terms of really detailing that for the guys. Because I think you're exactly right. I mean, there's always a question of, you know, why are we doing this? And you know, and most of the time, when you give that answer, they understand it. You know, they look, oh, okay, that makes sense. But they want that. You know, they want that, you know, the affirmation as to why that's happening. And that's fine, you know. And so we just need to do, you know, I'm probably
not doing it. But the days
of
because I said so are gone.
Right. No doubt about it. You know, and I'm, like I said, I mean, it's part of evolving and changing your ways as a coach. And, but I think it's, you know, it's important for, you know, for guys to understand, you know, why they're doing something. And, you know, I think Coach Tierney and the Denver staff talked a lot about that at the convention last December. And it makes sense. You know, it absolutely does. Because once they really do understand it, it does, I think it really takes them to another level.
Hey, Coach, we're coming up on it. Anything new in transition drills or something that somebody brought into the program last year that you hadn't run or you run differently than you ran before?
You know, we've been, you know, I mean, last year we did a lot of similar stuff that we've been doing. You know, I think, you know, I would say that I think, you know, I think a really cool drill, and because, you know, you'd email me yesterday and we've been talking, I've emailed back and forth for a couple of weeks now to get this all straight, but, I know one drill that I think is a cool drill that we've kind of used over the last couple of years. I don't think we talked about last time, and it's probably the easiest one maybe to explain on a phone conversation. But we we basically used the Max Soberlich, who is now the assistant at Bowdoin College and played at Hobart, was a great goalie at Hobart back in the day, and was my assistant here for a couple years. And he kind of brought it down. And basically what you end up doing, you know, Mike, is so, yeah, you know, you're doing all this transition drill, but then really at the end of the day, and it kind of speaks, you know, I'm bringing up maybe because we talked about earlier the stick skill part of it, right? And so you use this, you know, most fields will have a soccer circle at the midfield line. You know what I'm saying? It's 10 yards and in radius, and so we put the goal on one part of the circle, essentially. So the goal line is basically the soccer circle, and then we have on the top of the circle, we'll have, you know, maybe it's offense on one side, defense on the other. It might be a red team and a white team, depending on how we want to break it up, offense, defense. But basically, it's you know, we can throw in numbers 3-on-2. You know, throw in 3 red, 2 white. You know, if the red team scores, they stay. And now, you know, 2 white guys got to leave and 2 new white guys got to come in. We've done it even where it's 4-on-3, which makes it even tighter. And I'm standing, or one of the coaches is standing at the top of that circle with a bucket of balls, and we're just, you know, you shoot wide, you know, maybe the defense stays, and then 3 new offensive guys come in, or however you want to do it. And we've, you know, we've kind of done it almost like a baseball game. We'll do 9 innings, you know, like, okay, one team's the home team, you know. So, you know, you kind of keep – one of the coaches keep score. And but you're working in that, you know, really what's a, you know, a 20-by-20 circle. And it's tight, you know. And defense moves on by either making a save or the ball goes, you know, out of bounds somehow. They can kick it out of bounds and, you know, get it out of the danger area. And a lot of times we'll make it – also if a goalie makes a possession save – which we really harp on with our goalies to make those as much as they can, but that also deducts a score from the other team. So I don't know if that makes sense to you, and I'm explaining it correctly or not, but it's really intense. It's in a tight area. There's a little bit of banging going on. You don't do it every day, obviously, but it is one of those drills that our guys get pretty fired up for because it, you know, and inevitably what happens with that drill. And like
inevitably? Did you use inevitably in a sense?
I did. Wow. I did. Is the kid, you know, the kids with the best sticks, they shine. They shine in those areas because it's like box. It's a little smaller. You know, the kids who need more time to do things have a hard time in that drill because it is, you know, you just, you know, the spacing is just so limited. You know,
yeah, on our website, we call them crunch drills.
Okay.
A whole plethora. Did you hear that?
There you go.
Master's
That's a good
degree
one.
Guy. Yeah, we call them crunch drills, and I think we've got, oh my gosh, probably 6 or 7 ones. My
right.
question is, when we've talked about these kind of drills in the soccer circle, where do you put the cage again, Coach?
Right on the, you know, so if you're like on our field, you know, we don't have football lines, but if you're on a football field, let's say the middle of the field is the 50, you know, that soccer circle is going to, you know, intersect with the 40-yard line, right? And so we might put it right on the 40, you know, and then everybody else is on the other 40 because that's where the other side of that soccer circle is. I believe it's a 10-yard radius if I got my math correct. But, you know, and that – so on one – so she got, you know, if you were to catch the ball –
guys can't go behind?
They cannot go behind. Everything's in front
okay.
of the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's also nice, too, because – what you also find is that those attackmen who catch the ball in those low angles, now they can't, well, they still will at times, but we really try to eliminate them from fading behind the goal to take a shot, you know?
Right.
And so if they're, once they leave the soccer circle, they're out.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
It kind of makes them, hopefully it makes them curl to the middle a little
right.
bit more. But it just, you know, like I said, we do that maybe once a week. The guys like it. The, you know, ball is flying all over the place. It's maybe a good one at the end of practice. Or a good one at the beginning of practice. You know, like you talked about earlier, you know, how you change things up. Sometimes we'll come right out of that one because you better have your, you know, your helmet strapped up and your mouthpiece in because that one gets going.
Man, you're really good at this.
I don't know
hey,
about
we're
that.
Up on it, and I want to be respectful of your time. In the past, I'm going to talk about 2 ways to get your folks in front of Coach and his staff. You were running that fall league clinic, I think September and October. I think more for local kids because
yeah, much more so for
yeah.
local kids. Yeah.
You still running that? And what are the dates on that, Coach?
Yeah, we do that in the fall. There's like five Sundays, you know, September and October, and it's really for a lot of the youth kids here in town and some of the high school kids in town to come over and you know, get him a lot of touches like we talked about earlier, and you know, get him a chance to play a little, you know, put those into fruition, let him play a little bit as well.
You still have openings in that?
Oh yeah.
And you know, I don't want to talk about price on the air, but man, the price was extremely low.
Yeah, we
tried. So I would encourage you, if you're within an hour driving distance or whatever, to give that some thought after you go to church.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we get that price.
Sure. Absolutely.
Jancic would be proud of me, wouldn't he?
He would.
Yeah, good Lutheran. And then the one I want you to talk about a little bit is the Winter Showcase, which I think was on the website. Hey, you just go to my site and click a link, and it'll take you to all this information.
Okay. Yeah, and it's also on our website, you know, lynchburg.edu.
Yeah, I'm going to link to your website.
Cool. Good.
Yeah, January 15th.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us about the Winter Showcase a little bit?
Yeah, you know, that last year took off. That took off to a whole nother level last year. You know, we capped it at 80 kids just because we do it all in one field here in the middle of campus. But we had about 10 other coaches here from, you know, some Division I, Division III schools, a lot of ODAC, you know, schools. And basically, you know.
You know, I'm available that day.
Awesome. Come on up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we it's great because the kids get a chance to play a little bit. You know, it's right before their season and get a chance to play in front of some really, you know, outstanding coaches and programs. And we make it a lot of fun. You know, we'll end up splitting the team in about four teams. We do a lot of, you know, we'll let a lot of the coaches who are here run some of the drills and what they want to run and how they run it at their programs, break for lunch, then come back in the afternoon. We break them into teams, let them play in the morning so we can kind of even out the teams and make them as competitive as possible, and then they play games in the afternoon. It's a good, you know, 9 to 4, 9 to 5 day, and kids, you know, last year was awesome. You know, the kids had a lot of fun, and you know, we had about 80 kids, which is the cap, and you know, it's and that registration and all that should be open here right around the 1st of September. We're getting ready to go open that up.
I'm writing that down. Hey, man.
Thank you very much.
I am looking forward to when Billy's 13. I'll have you back.
He's growing.
Well, yeah. I mean, how tall is he going to be?
I don't know. We'll see.
Is he left-handed?
No, he's right-handed.
Okay.
Left-footed, but right-handed, which is kind of interesting. So
yeah,
we're
really
figuring that one out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I can't thank you enough. Stay in line with me here. Special thanks to Coach Kudelka with unbelievable success at Lynchburg. What a gorgeous, gorgeous campus in a nice town. Obviously, I've been there. Great place, great staff. Didn't you have a guy from Worthington on your staff? That just came to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Yeah, shout out to my my Worthington High School guys.
Yeah, he just,
you know,
finished his MBA here, and yeah, she's working, got a great job out in Chicago, so he's doing awesome.
Awesome.
Andrew,
anyway, Coach, you are great. Continued success to you. I got 5 pages of notes here. We'll try and figure out what we're going to write up, get us all this on the website. Hey, guys, remember, you got an unbelievable responsibility influencing lives of these young people. Take it very, very seriously. Until next time, special thanks. This is Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com.
All right, man, so maybe I was a little out of hand there. Great coach, obviously, great podcast. Hey, again, I have to say thank you for everything you've done for me. I can't believe that the support of the site and the loyalty of the premium guys. You guys are awesome. If I can help you with coaches' clinics, we're scheduling now for fall, all that kind of stuff. Got a new ebook we released, Transition Drills 2. Hope you take a look at that, but I just need to say thank you. Until next time.